So I'm going to repeat the question here for the recorder. I forgot about that. I'm not experienced with recorders. What may cause a child to be a slow learner or have a learning disability?
Things that with the genetics that the child can't control, right, or from the womb, and alcohol being present.
Right. So sometimes it's from some kind of a genetic weakness that happened, and sometimes then he mentioned about the alcohol abusive background. And that's often our adopted children come from abusive backgrounds. And they definitely do have a physical disability many times. One of the students I'm teaching presently, if I understand right, his mother tried to abort him before he was born. And of course, according to her testimony, she wasn't involved with alcohol and drugs and so forth. Well, the evaluator in the evaluation that I was in said, if she did that, I don't believe the rest of this. But he had physical, by looking at him, he was somewhat physically deformed and extra small for his age. And I knew that he had had heart problems as a younger child. He had had heart problems and they had somewhat resolved, but he was still physically weak. He also did not have 3D vision, I was told. And so a lot of these things were because of the abusive background. And of course, he had severe behavioral issues as well. So, developmental delay from genetic weakness, genetic problem, or from an abusive background. Also from severe illness. My cousin had Bright's disease when he was an infant, and that left him permanently, I'm going to say, slightly mentally retarded. He's able to function and hold a job, but learning was very difficult for him. And that was from a disease he had as a child. Another one is just an unstructured background. A lack of stimulating interaction with between the adults and the children. And it can happen in an unstructured home. And that's not for our teachers. We really shouldn't be judging that. But a child that has simply not been stimulated or interacted with. And these children sometimes, of course, are adopted children as well and coming out of orphanages where they're cared for, but they're not interacted with. And one of my adopted boys that I taught would have been more of that type, as I remember the story. They're neglected. And one of the things I learned in childhood growth and development when I was studying it is that simply the interaction of touch and touching a child and just playing with it not only helps the child to be stimulated mentally and develop that way, but they won't even physically grow well without the touch. You know, you can put the child in the crib, you can give it food, you can have it change, you can keep it clean, but if you don't touch and interact with that child, not only will it be mentally retarded, but it won't even grow physically to the right size. So there's something about the Lord created children to be interacted with and touched and talked to and loved and stimulated. Lack of self-discipline also, and that could be the lack of self-discipline can be from a developmental problem. It also can be from weak training. But a child that has not been taught or disciplined, taught to obey, taught to submit, taught to be still, that can eventually be causing a learning disability. So the point of knowing what causes learning disabilities is not to lay the finger on or to blame somebody. Well, these parents are at fault, their child has a problem, or this teacher's not doing the job right. It's not to try to place blame, and also not to relate to the child as a victim. You know the child has a problem, but you don't want to just make a victim out of the child and have them have a victim mentality or to develop a stigma. One of the things I struggle with as a special ed teacher is it's a stigma for children to come to my room. But I have found that if the parents and the special ed teacher and the school board and the principal, all the adults involved in that child's life, agree that this is the right thing to do, the stigma is not an issue. You can soon help the child work through it. If one of those parties responsible is not in agreement with what's happening, and the child knows that, then the stigma is an issue. But I have had to sometimes just help them to work through that stigma, either spoken or unspoken. But one day during visiting days, when we had times that the parents could come and go and visit without knocking on the door, one of the girls came in my room and she was troubled about all the parents seeing her come to my room. And I just simply asked her, well, were you doing what you were supposed to be doing? Well, yes, you were. I said, well, if you're doing what you're to be doing, then you don't need to fear what's happening. And that took care of the issue. Number two, what are some warning signs that a child may have a special need? So what should we be looking for? Warning signs. So we have the student, we're having difficulty, but how do we decipher? Is this something that should determine that this child needs a tutor, extra intervention? How do we make, or is it just they just need more help to be diligent and focused? How do you start deciphering that? Is it just will? We'll get to that more later. Well, number one on my list is delayed language. A child who is ready to enter school should be able to speak in complete sentences and ask basic questions. Hearing precedes speaking. So if a child has delayed language, we start first of all thinking, is this child hearing or attending to the sounds of spoken language? And will such a child be able to easily learn phonics? Hearing and speaking precede reading and writing. So really, language skills precede teaching them to read. Hearing and language comes first. Children learn to speak without your conscious effort of teaching them to speak. Mothers are teaching their infants to speak when they're talking to them, and they speak in motherese. Their language that they speak to infants. But you do help your children learn to speak, but it's not consciously. That child is to pick it up automatically. And if they haven't by first grade and they have a language delay, a significant noticeable language delay from the other students, that's a good clue that there's a need to work on. Recently, at our school teacher training, I had a series of classes on working with language issues, language remediation, and I have worked with children, and I went and pulled records of, I think it was about, I looked at the preschool test, about seven of the students who I'm either presently teaching or have taught in special ed, and at least six out of those seven, when I looked at their preschool test, language on the preschool test minus. Language problems. And that was on their preschool test that they took to see if they were ready to enter first grade. And they had a language problem. It came up and they ended up in my room eventually. So delayed language is a good signal that there's something here other than just will or, shape up or whatever. It's a need. Also, delayed physical development. So what do you look at to see if a child has delayed physical development? And I want to mention here that I'm giving you a list of things, but it's usually more than one that determines if there's a need. If it's just one particular area, that may not be so serious, but usually you have to look at several factors. But impulsive actions and overflow movements are aimless, repetitive motions that increase with fatigue. One thing I noticed working with special needs children is, and this happened, they call it stimming, but as they become tireder, they start doing things repetitively. One day, he's an adopted child, I've been working with him for years, but just run your head up and down on your desk lid repeatedly. You need to come in and you sit down, just very abnormal, and just continuous. Those kinds of stimming movements are and as they get tired, it increases. And I hear first grade teachers say, that the child about hovers over their desk and you have them. That could be just they need more discipline and training, but not necessarily. If that goes along with another package, with these other things, that's a good symbol a good sign that there's some, or infant-like behavior, especially for a school age child. You know, they suck on their fingers, especially whenever things get a little uneasy, or again when they're getting tired, and you see them sucking on their fingers or drooling, or startles easily. This third grade girl still startles like an infant. That's a sign that there's something wrong in her central nervous system. And I have to be very, I'm loud by nature and charismatic with my children. Maybe I'm not charismatic here, but when I'm in my classroom with children, I'm just glad nobody's watching sometimes. But with her, I had to back off on charisma. I had to start trying to soften my voice. And because if I got too stimulated, she would just startle like an infant and just start freezing and locking down. A third grader shouldn't startle like that unless you suddenly intentionally scare them. Now that's a sign of a lack of physical development. Also, graceful body movements. A body movement should not be whole body movements. The autistic boy that I taught, when I began teaching him, I would go up to his room to get him and I would follow him down the hall. I like to walk behind him. And this was a sign that he had balance problems. When he wanted to look at things as he walked down the hall, his whole upper trunk, he was very rigid and stiff, and his whole upper trunk would twist. He couldn't just casually look, you know, with the turn of the head. And he had to practically turn the whole top of his body because he had to keep his balance. Another thing would be listening. If you know the child has you're struggling, they seem to have a problem, listen to them on the steps. I get to hear the children. I teach in a large multi-level school, so I hear the children coming down from the buses down the steps, and I even hear second graders, and you know they're second graders and older, and I'll hear them coming thumping 1 foot. They're not cross pattern. It's just thump 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 thump. Well, that might be all right, but if they have other problems along with that, they don't have a smooth cross pattern gait, you know, alternate stepping. That's a sign that they and they're struggling to learn. It's part of the package. It's a sign that it is a legitimate need. Also, you know, can they skip, hop on 1 foot, ride a bike, pump a swing? By school age, they should be able to do that. If they cannot, don't worry about it. If they're learning well, you know, help them to practice. But if they're not learning well and that they're also having that problem, then this is a handicap. Can they combine modalities? Can they look and copy, or listen and write at the same time? That takes physical maturation to do that. Or when they try to listen and write or look and copy, things degenerate. They cannot do two things like that. That's a sign that they have a problem. Unable to keep up with the pace of the class or the weight of the workload. One of the things I notice when I visit a regular classroom, I do teach some regular classes in high school, but I don't teach regular elementary classes, but when I go visit a regular classroom, is the rapid pace of classrooms and the switch between classes and everything's happening and the students know what to do, their books come out, and these children cannot keep up. They don't get their books out on time, everybody's going on, they don't have their books open to the right place. And when you try to help them to keep up, then they become frustrated. They don't keep up to that click and tick. Also, one of the things that concerns me, as a school faculty, we have about 16 on our school faculty. And when we're discussing a child's need, and you start hearing, well, I've been cutting out this, and I'm starting to cut out this, and they can't do the whole workload, that's a sign that there's a need. Lack imagination. A lot of times when I'm working with these special needs students, they have no imagination, some of them. You try to write a paragraph or a sentence and get them to give you ideas, and it just isn't there. And you have to start asking specific questions to get them to generate something. But then there are some that are over-imaginative, and they're way beyond what's normal. That's also a handicap. schoolwork does require creativity, but it also requires logical thinking as well. Has still not mastered preschool concepts and skills. For example, counting objects on a one by one. This third grader still struggles to count one to one with an object. She can count, and she can count objects if I'm there monitoring to make sure that she's only counting as she gets to each object. But when she's counting coins, well, she'll count when she picks it up and then say the next number when she puts it down. And her hand and her mouth just can't seem to stay together. Well, a third grader should easily be able to. So that's a preschool skill, counting one to one. Even 5-year-olds, 4-year-olds can do that some. More and less and larger and smaller. Do they have that ability to comprehend? This girl, I have not been able to get her to comprehend more and less with objects. With blue water in jars, she can tell me which jar has more water or less water. With gummy bears on her desk, you would think a child would naturally want the most gummy bears. You know, if they're 5 and 2, well, wouldn't you grab 5 gummy bears? You certainly would, but does it seem like that concept is getting through? Sequencing, counting. If a child is in school and just doesn't have these basic skills, and so if you're a first grade to a third grade teacher, you ought to pour through some preschool workbooks. You know, Rod and Staff's, or I don't know, CLE has preschool workbooks. Maybe Pathway has them. But the things that they teach in those workbooks, I have learned from experience and trying to teach special needs children those are foundational skills. And if a child is missing them, you can try hard in the classroom. And what they need to do is go back there and help them get those skills. And of course, if they have to go back and get those skills, then's when you need a tutor or a private teacher, because the classroom teacher can't do it. And does the student have a diagnosed developmental problem? Most of the children I work with, I don't have a diagnosis. Nobody has pursued that. Maybe the parents don't see it as necessary. I'm just supposed to work with the child. I don't know. But then I have worked with the one boy I work with. I said he is autistic. He's on that spectrum. His diagnosis was pervasive developmental disorder. And of course, maybe some of you work with children diagnosed with dyslexia, or we've had Down syndrome in our school. But most of the time, I'm not working with children that have actually been labeled with something. But if they have a diagnosis like that, that can help you. Or obvious mental retardation. And one of the things you can go by is strange behavior that's abnormal. Like this third grade girl, when she gets excited, she just starts flapping her arms in a very abnormal way. It's not the way normal third graders act when they're excited. It's a different type of flapping. I don't know if I can even do it. But you can see that there's a mental retardation here. This child's not just not trying. Or abnormal social responses. Children can have social handicaps, and that can be a special need. And that's autistic children have this, the abnormal social responses. And this girl has that as well. Most children like to have some commendation or some praise. And I've heard, you know, that you should commend your student. Don't just always say the negative. You know, look for areas of, well, I know she likes commendation, but I have to give it out by the teaspoon. If I give her a cup of commendation at once, it works as negatively on her as if I scold her. As soon as she detects that I'm praising her excessively or a little too much, she starts freezing down, not responding, or doing less quality work. It just, if I give her a little wee bit, and she could tell I was delighted, and that's all, she gets excited, and it does what I wanted it to do. So that's an abnormal social response. Those things show that there's a need. Now, number 3, what are some common traits of children with special needs? And I guess I was giving warning signs, but now things that you notice. Maybe it's the same thing. Anyone want to? I feel like some of my questions overlap, but I'll try to give you different answers. One is, works impulsively rather than deliberately and steadily. And when you give a child, let's say you sit down with them, and this girl, I gave her this preschool achievement test, which is coloring in bubbles, but you can soon detect, and I read the test to her, I told her what to do, but you can soon detect if they're working impulsively or without thinking or whether they're focused. You know, there were times that I knew by the way she responded and colored in circles, she gave no thought. Just for what was the first thing she saw. And some of these children, since they can't keep up and they aren't getting finished, then they just randomly put something down. Or maybe there's a pattern, maybe there's not. You know, just constant impulsive work. Now, some of that maybe they just need a little discipline, a little pressure. But if it's a prevailing problem, all special needs children are somewhat like that. It's hard. They just do things quickly. They do not read questions and directions completely and accurately. They try to take shortcuts. It's too hard to read. And the one thing I've learned is they're generally honest. The special needs children are generally honest. Now, they can get clever sometimes, but generally if I ask them, they're frank. And my one boy, he didn't read that. He just tried to, it was too much bother. It was too hard. And they're trying to avoid excessive work. They're trying to keep up. They're overwhelmed. Perseveration, that's a good one. When they're counting $5 bills, so you have three $5 bills and a $1 bill. That $1 bill is going to be a five. They started out with fives, and so everything's fives. You read a word list, starts out with certain vowel sounds, then the rest of them are going to have that vowel sound. They start into something, and they just go, and they have trouble stopping and shifting. This girl, I'll tell her, count out so many coins for me, so many cents, and she can count, and if I'm watching, I can make sure that she's getting the coin and she's keeping her hand and mouth coordinated, but she will not stop. You know, you say, stop at 20 cents. Well, she just keeps going. You know, that perseveration. Once they start, they can't. And then I'm really struggling to go, let's say, counting dimes and then switching to pennies. She can't stop and say, now, I got to the end of my dimes. Now I need to switch to counting my ones. It's just, you get going and you keep going. That's perseveration, and they have that problem. Inability to stay focused for a sustained period of time. They're distracted by external and internal stimuli. Zoo day, field trips, something exciting going on at home in the evening, end of the school year. That those special ed rooms run best on routine, and the children are happiest on routine. And when my children come to my room and they say, I can't wait till I know that day I'm going to have to slow down, put up with some things I wouldn't normally put up with, they cannot handle. And even they can't, let's say they're taking a test. My autistic boy, he gets derailed by patterns of numbers or by certain pictures. Or, you know, you're taking an achievement test to see how he's making progress, and he notices that his one piece of scrap paper is thicker than another piece of scrap paper. Now this isn't a test, you know. You're to be focused and working. But you know, this one piece of paper doesn't feel the same. So we went off on that bunny trail. Especially if you would have a time test, that would be a problem. Or, hey, that date is the same month as I was born. Well, that's a nice observation, but you derailed off of what we were doing. They just get distracted with limitless things. They get distracted in their own brain. And he just will, you know, I'll say, well, where did you go? Oh, he went home. And in my room, they know I lived in Africa for a while. And so I often will say, come back from Africa. You know, I can tell that in their mind, and then they kind of startle a little bit and they look at me and, all right, we're ready to go again. Or when you're trying to read and their eyes keep darting. You know, they start reading and then you look up the picture. You start reading and they look up the picture. And that darting focus, it just keeps moving. That is a common trait. Probably doesn't matter if they're dyslexic or ADD. I don't know what label you want to put there, but that's a common trait. Cognitive overload, burnout. watch for these children burn out, and you can tell by their expression and their body language that I'm done. My energy is gone. And my one student, by the end of the week, he was coming down last year, the last period, so I could help him with his homework. He was in my room during the morning. He goes up to his homeroom for some things. And then at the end of the day, he would come down for a study hall to do his Bible and music. And I could tell by the end of Friday, by his facial and body expression, he's burned out. And when I sit, I have to sit beside him. If I don't, he won't get anything done. But I can tell, and he starts getting edgy, and I have to go very gently with him. He is to the end, and if I try too hard, cracks. Get angry or just lose control. Tend to learn things in individual formats. I'm going to have to hurry. So you teach them their flashcards vertically on your flashcards, but then they can't seem to connect. And somehow if they're horizontal, then it's different. They don't know the answer. They only know it if it's the way their flashcard is. And they have to write everything down to see it in the right format. I have done some of teaching them vertical and horizontal flash facts because they can't seem to switch between those two. So when they go to reduce fractions, suddenly now they have to divide horizontally, and then it can't be the same as when it's vertically. And my one boy, I was teaching him about right angles. And we were learning about angles, we were learning with the protractor, and finally we went to our shop. We have a woodworking shop in our school that the high school students have classes in. And I took him over to the woodworking shop. And even though we had been working with angles on the board and on paper and protractors, and you would have thought he understood it, he could not tell me that a speed square, you know what a builder's speed square is, a little square with a diagonal across. He couldn't tell me that speed square had a right angle in it. It was a different format from what we were learning. But when I drew a right angle on a piece of wood and I drew it with a pencil, well, yeah, that's a right angle. But he couldn't seem to get then that metal corner there on that square is also a right angle. It's just the same as that one I drew. It seems like they learn each thing in its individual format, and if you don't teach it each single step of the way, that makes my work tiring sometimes. Of course, poor language, I talked about that, I'll go quickly with that. Poor comprehension, difficulty with memorization. Well, they can memorize memory work. They say their memory work, but I've drilled their number facts thousands of times, and they just can't get it. I've worked with those children. You would think they can say their... This girl that I'm working with, she can memorize her memory work fine. I help her with her memory work, and she goes and says long passages, but she can't get her simple plus zeros and ones and two facts. You know, it just doesn't go in there. Poor self-evaluation and analytical skills. They don't think about their thinking. They don't analyze whether what they're doing is making sense. And now, wait, I'm going the wrong direction here. I'm coming out with something that's not sensible. I'm going to have to try a different... They don't think about their thinking. All right, question 4. How can we rate the severity of a child's difficulty? How do you determine now, is this just mild? Is this severe? Do we need to do something drastic? Do we need to get special help? Or can I work with it in my room? Or how can we rate it? Well, how does he respond to extra one-on-one drill or coaching? So the first thing you're going to try is you're going to bring him up to your desk in breaks, study hall, or you're going to give him just a little extra one-on-one help. Does that make a significant difference? You start that, and I can tell that if I keep doing this, that there's going to be some progress. How did he respond to retention? At Paradise, we try to, if we need to have a child repeat a grade, we try to do it from grades 1 to 3. After that, we don't generally repeat. But if he repeated a grade and he's still failing, then he needs more than just repeating a grade. He needs some intervention. Is the problem chronic? Does it keep persisting in a consistent way after you've made persistent effort to help it? And does remedial efforts increase discipline problems? That is a freak or behavior problem. This one boy I taught, he's going to get out next year. I've had him ever since. I've taught him now from second grade to ninth grade. But in second grade, his teacher had a little program to help him stay focused and pay attention. She was trying to, and she was reasonable with it, but just to help him to sit still, stay focused. And it just started erupting into severe behavior emergencies. The more she tried, the worse the behavior came, the bigger the discipline became. And it was not just small issues. It was major classroom disruption. And when he would come down to my room and I was to help him with an assignment, I'd start trying to... Now, let's look for that answer. Let's look. He would get visibly angry. And if you discipline him a little bit, he would start muttering and getting very agitated. And if you discipline him for that, then it became the next. And it just would escalate into constant emergencies. Abnormally. Well, I believe in discipline, and I use discipline in my room, but I soon learned that this is a need that he has. It's not that he's not trained. And he had a background of abuse. Well, you can also look at his preschool tests. Do you give preschool tests to see if they're ready for school? At our school, we do. Look at his preschool test. At our school, we give an IQ test at 3rd, 5th, and 8th. Look at his IQ test and his achievement test. We give standardized achievement tests at the end of the year. Remember, tests are only, paper tests can only do so much. They're not the total answer. But when you see an agreement with everything else, an average IQ is about 100. And mildly, an IQ below 70... So if their IQ is below 70 and it is in conjunction with abnormal social skills or trouble with daily living skills, he's below 70, but he also can't tie his shoes and drools and has trouble keeping after his body like a normal child would. That in conjunction with below 70 IQ is a sign of mental retardation. And so you can watch that. And also consider the core average of the student's homework. When we think a child's in danger in our school, our teachers have to send in a paper to the principal with their core scores and a core average and any information about how they're working with that child, and then we discuss it as a faculty. But remember, a B in first grade, EMP's recommendation for passing first grade is that they must be getting B's or better. And what you need to make that clear to parents of first graders, that if their child has lower than B on their report cards consistently, that's really F's, E's and F's. Because if you follow the trend, a child getting lower than B on as core average, core subjects in first grade, till he gets down to the mid grades, he's going to be pulling D's, E's and F's. And the reason behind, so EMP's recommendation is grade 1's B, grade 2's B minus, grade 3 is C minus, grade 4 is D plus, and grades 5 to 10 is D minus. So the farther they progress in school, the lower grades they can be pulling and still be considered passing. But the reason is because grades 1 to 3 are the foundational grades. In grades 1 to 3, they are learning the material that they will use as a medium for continuing their education from grades 4 on. So what they learn in grades 1 to 3 is the tools they'll use to continue learning. That's why they must get grades 1 and 3. And that's a whole subject in itself on what those foundations are. Let's go to question 5. How can we determine whether a child's problem is lack of effort or lack of ability? Is this child just being stubborn or canny? What can you do? How do you know? I face that every day. That's my daily challenge in my room. Can this child? Can't they? Should I discipline? Should I not? Should I be patient? Should I? And I make wrong calls sometimes, and I apologize sometimes. And the problem with these children is, here's the language, they cannot communicate well, and I can't ask. This girl, I cannot ask her what her problem is. She will not speak if I ask her. And if I ask her a question about a story I read to her, she might speak with one word. And I can say, well, now could you put that into a sentence for me? She might then haltingly put that word into a sentence. But she'll speak to me in one word or speak nothing. And so you can't say, well, why aren't you or why can't you? They won't tell you. They can't. At least it seems like it. And you try to put pressure to get them to talk and that doesn't work. Well, is it sporadic or habitual? Is it just something that happens occasionally or is this a continual thing? The consistency of the problem can help you. Now, I said they can't talk, but then there are children who do have who do become very vocal about their attitudes and opinions of it. If they're very vocal about it, I doubt it's a serious problem. The children that really have an underlying problem generally aren't very vocal. They don't know how to express it. Whenever you thought he did his best and the results were disappointing, does he act disappointed or frustrated? What is his response? You can tell that he started out writing very neatly. He was going to try, but the harder he tried, sometimes when they start, okay, I'm going to make my one boy can write very neat penmanship, but when he does that, then spelling degenerates and other things degenerate. When they start trying in one area, it degenerates in another area. Then that tells me that's a lack of ability. They wanted to and they couldn't. Is he able to sustain his response to corrective measures for a sufficient length of time? You know, a normal child, if you give corrective measures, you can say, all right, well, we made a correction here. We made them redo that paper, or we made them fix it up at recess, or we made them... I made an effort to make a correction, and that's going to make a difference for maybe 2 or 3 days, and then we might have to brush it up again. There's going to be a significant difference. You'll see response to your corrective efforts. These children, it doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter if you made them stay in every day from recess to do something better, or if you made them redo it a couple of times. It would not make a significant difference. You could discipline, it won't last. Their focus won't stay sustained. Their work will not be, it just will not make a significant difference in the immediate. What you're going to have to wait to see is did it make a difference in 3 years? Then can you see a change? That's the kind of stuff I'm working with. After I've taught this child for 3 years, now I see a difference. Well, I'm going to skip the will and the handicap unless somebody wants to know about will and handicap. Is this child being... That's a little bit like I had, but I had a few things here. Maybe I won't. I'll give a few things. Slow learners can be manipulative and clever. They try to get things out of you and off your face and what can I get by with? I have... So what do you do? I learned with my one boy that when he... Don't know. That didn't mean he didn't know. It could mean I don't know. That's one meaning. It could mean I'm not focused. I'm feeling contrary. Well, after a while you have to learn how to decide which one of those it means. And there are some responses that are always wrong. When you're thinking about discipline and how to relate to a special needs child, moral transgressions always need discipline. Not academic issues. But, for example, arguing with the teacher, that's a moral transgression. Unless they give you a reasonable explanation. There are times you can tell by the answer they gave you in response to your discipline that they did have a legitimate excuse and you needed to hear it. But if it's just arguing with you, that's a moral transgression. Lying is a moral transgression. Balance is a moral transgression. Outbursts of anger. Stealing. Oh, this boy that I was working with. He is 15. And this past year, I had to deal with a stealing issue. And I don't know if I should tell the story, but needless to say, I ended up calling his father to take him home from school. And I had a broken desk lid and some other problems. But, you know, 15 and stealing? But this boy was trained. But it's a moral transgression. And maybe we could say he was handicapped, he can't help it, but if I don't teach him that that was wrong, the state will take over after a while. That's what we have to remember. If we do not teach this child that there are consequences and he is uncontrollable, I have another friend in a state hospital and he's mentally ill. But the state took over because he was uncontrollable. And they do control them. If nothing else, they'll just give them an injection. It just knocks them down. So the state will. We need to teach them that moral transgression does have consequences. Ask them to repeat what you just told them to do. Give them some fruit tests, I call them. So is this child disobeying or they can't? Well, give them a fruit test. What did I tell you to do? If they can repeat it, then they knew better. Give them a specific and possible command. If you don't know what else to do, just say, well, put your pencil at the top of the desk. Or write a letter on your paper, whatever. Or just give them a... You think they're... You're not sure if they're being... Just give them a specific command. Do this. Something you know they can do. And I have... If they're feeling contrary and out of sorts, and you give them a little fruit test like that, and they start doing something different, then you know that it's deliberate. Well, I didn't get across here. The next special needs class tomorrow on relating to special needs, maybe I could quickly cover a few things here. And then that class is where I want to get more practical on working with them. Do any of you have questions you want to answer? I will say that I gave you some charts on the back here that you can study. These are three different students A, B, C. You can look at their grades. You can look at the notes that were written on their records. You can look at their IQ. You can look at their achievement test growth curve and make some evaluation from that. Yeah, you're dismissed, but any questions?
What do you say the readiness test, how much do you go by that as far as knowing whether they're ready for first grade? What are some... first numbers or things you see on readiness tests that indicate this child is ready?
Well, I don't administer them. The first grade teachers do. But if the child has a fall birthday, especially if he's a boy, and he scores low on his readiness test, I would definitely hold him back or put him on a preschool program, whatever you have to do by law. In Pennsylvania, Maryland, at this point, If we have to hold them back, we still have to have them on a preschool program. And so they come to school once a month, and you know they should be working on preschool materials at home. But I would hold them back, especially boys are 6 months behind girls generally. Girls mature faster, and then the boys, after the girls stop maturing, the boys get their final maturing growth spurt. But at grade one, if they score low on their preschool readiness test and they have a fall birthday, if you have a legal system to hold them back, I would.
Yeah, so what would be a low score?
I'm not going to be able to answer that. I don't administer the test. And I have the preschool tests here, and some of them I could understand, some of them I wasn't familiar with interpreting. But you might have to ask somebody that administers the test. Yeah. But like the one here on A, you can see in the language skill area that he has minuses. Any other questions? You're dismissed, but I'll answer questions as long as you want.
It's about 10 minutes, so
okay.
I'll make it over. I mean,
yeah, it's fine. They may leave when they want to.
Yeah. I'm ready to have a
What?
Turned off.
Thank you.